Welcome to Vintage Voices, a program of the theater company of Sun City's Radio Players. This program comes to you on Wednesdays at 12:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11 a.m. on WHRULP 101.5 FM, Huntley Community Radio. Today's play is Beyond Reasonable Doubt, part of the Whistler series that ran from May 1942 to September 1955 on the West Coast in Chicago and over Armed Forces Radio. This is our seventh in a series of 12 newly recorded classic plays in the mystery genre that will air through January 2018. Today's story features Jan Bachmeier as the announcer and the elevator operator, Sarah Elam as the Whistler, Tina Gannon Hinman as Isabel and Barbara, Judy Stage as Gina Crane, Mary Lou Chamberlain as the store clerk and the court clerk, Lauren Argyle as Floyd Durant, Jim Rice as Clinton Crane, Randy Church as defense attorney Clark, George Marcotte as Mr. Jackson, Maria Thomas as Mrs. Adamson, Dave Strang as the district attorney, and Ed Dennis as the judge. The play is directed by Jan Dennis, who was assisted by Gail Patterson. It is recorded and prepared for broadcast by Jim Eggers and Tony Pratt.
The Sun City Radio Players present Beyond Reasonable Doubt, an episode of the Whistler series. That whistle is your signal for the Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
The red jacket on the mannequin in the window in the Berkshire shop was a thing that brought Gina across the street to the south side of Kimberly Drive. It was an unusual thing for Gina to do, but the jacket was a stunning one, like everything handled by the Berkshire shops from coast to coast. And Gina had told herself that now, after 5 years, it was high time she got rid of the strange subconscious dread that kept her away from the shiny black marble front of the most fashionable dress shop in the Hillcrest. She examined the jacket and had almost decided to risk going in to inquire about it when a man, a tall, dark-haired man with a white carnation in his lapel, hurried past her into the door. Her heart stopped, cold for a moment, and then began to pound. Her first impulse was to hurry on and never come back. But she stopped, not sure, then walked cautiously to the glass door, looked through at his retreating back, the familiarity of his walk, the slope of his shoulders, then...
Gina! Gina, darling!
Oh, hello, Isabel.
How wonderful to find you here. Darling, you've got to help me. You've simply got to. I'm a desperate woman.
I'm sorry, Isabel. I'm in a hurry.
Oh, it won't take you a minute, dear. Come on inside and I'll explain.
Please, dear. I told you I can't. I simply have to run along.
Oh, come on now. It's time you got acquainted with the Berkshire shop. And you've got to help me pick out a dress. They're lovely here.
But really, I...
What's the matter, Gina? Here you are, one of the best-dressed women in Hillcrest, yet you avoid the Berkshire like the plague. Have you got something against them?
I've just been too busy to worry much about clothes.
Rubbish! Look at you now, like you stepped out of a salon. Black and white. That lovely black and white bag. Where did you get it?
Stillman's. This morning.
It's a beautiful bag. How do you manage to find those things? Well, in we go now.
I can't stay long, really.
We'll only be a minute. I'll meet you at the elevator, dear. I want to speak to the clerk at the glove counter for a moment.
Going up, please.
If you'll wait just a moment.
Of course, ma'am.
Which way did she go?
Well, how are you, Jenny? I haven't seen you in a long time.
You startled me.
Don't you remember me, Jenny?
Jenny?
That's right. Jenny Barton.
I think you must have made a mistake.
Oh, did I?
I'm afraid so.
I'm very sorry.
Clerk?
Yes?
You saw the woman I came in with? The lady in the blue crate?
Why, yes, ma'am.
When she comes back, would you tell her I've gone home? Please, I don't feel well.
Yes, Gina. You're not feeling well. And there's a good reason. The tall, thin-faced man with the white carnation. Handsome in a cruel sort of way. You do remember him, don't you, Gina? Yes. After Seattle. There was no forgetting about Floyd Durant. All afternoon, you keep telling yourself you pulled it off. That Floyd Durant would decide he made a mistake. That Jenny Barton of Seattle and Gina Crane of Hillcrest are two different people. Just an unpleasant incident, Gina. Not worth mentioning to anyone. Least of all to Clinton Crane, your husband.
Well, Gina, did you have a pleasant day?
Why, yes, Clinton, quite pleasant. I went shopping.
Oh?
With Isabel. She was looking for a dress.
Gina, I wish you wouldn't see so much of Isabel.
Oh, she's harmless, dear, and...
And awfully stupid.
I know, Clinton, but somehow I couldn't help myself.
You could tell her you're busy.
She wouldn't take no for an answer.
Well, it's a cruel way to put it, I suppose. But you and I are going to have to be careful of the company we keep from now on.
Why is that?
At the last committee meeting, my name came up for state senator. After that Brooks affair... They'll go over the next candidate with a fine-tooth comb.
But after all, Isabel...
I know. Just keep it in mind, darling. Oh, by the way, this letter came for you this afternoon.
What is it?
I'm not the prying type, dear. You know that. Funny, though, it was stuck under the door when I came home. Well, aren't you going to read it?
Yes, of course. My dear Mrs. Oh!
You sit down as you read it, trying to hold yourself steady. Clinton is watching you, Gina. You can't let him know. Can't give him the slightest chance to guess what's in that letter. What makes the words fly off the paper and bury themselves in your brain like jagged pieces of shrapnel.
June 14th. My dear Mrs. Crane, apparently you don't remember me, Floyd Durant. But I remember you, Jenny. I remember you very well. I know when you read this, you'll wish I were dead. Because of our strange association, while I was at a store detective at the Berkshire Shop in Seattle. I'm staying at a boarding house, 217 Pine Street, third floor rear. If you'd like to talk over old times, drop around tonight at 9 o'clock and bring your checkbook with you. That is, unless you'd like me to have my conversation with someone else, your husband, for example, or the police.
What's the matter, dear? Bad news?
No, it's nothing important. Just a note from my dressmaker.
Oh?
Remember? I told you I was getting a new suit. It's nothing important.
So that's it, Gina. 5 years are pushed aside. And you're back where you started. Floyd Durant has found you at last. And the whole ugly mess you left behind in Seattle's right on your doorstep. You know Floyd very well, don't you, Gina? You know he'll keep your secret. You know you can trust him. If you pay him as long as you live. Luckily, Clinton is due tonight at a political meeting. And shortly after he leaves, you pull your car out of the garage. The letter with Floyd's address on it is tucked safely away in your bag. 217 Pine Street, third floor rear. A half hour later, you're walking down the long, dark hallway toward his room. But as you raise your hand to knock, something stops you.
I don't care anymore, Floyd. I tell you, I don't care. Nothing matters now. You can do as you please, but don't come running back to me. I'm all through. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to push you.
Certainly.
Well, Jenny, I've been expecting you.
I've come to tell you I can't.
No such word as can't. Close the door.
Your friend seems to be a little upset.
Temperament. Barbara's a very unstable girl. Not like you, Jenny. You always took everything in stride. Like a drink?
No, thanks.
I'll have one. I felt like shouting Eureka when I saw you at the Berkshire today. It's been a long search.
Let's get it over, Floyd. How much do you want?
Well, let's figure how much I would have had if you'd played square with me. I let you steal those clothes in the Seattle store. You were to pick up a rich guy.
Never mind that. I ask you how much.
Depends on your resources.
You've got to give me some time. I can't raise the money overnight.
Now, Jenny, let's not be that way. Never do to have his wife exposed as a thief. Worth a lot to a man like that to keep his skirts clean.
I can raise $1,000, Floyd. Is that enough?
No! How about 10?
I couldn't possibly. Clinton gives me a weekly allowance and balances my bank statement.
Listen, Jenny, I covered for you. It wasn't easy. I played it stupid, but not anymore. No cheap little shop girl can play me for a sucker twice.
You're in it as much as I am. You're just as crooked.
Careful, Jenny. You talk pretty big for a thief.
I won't let you ruin my life, Floyd. I won't let you do it.
No?
I'll stop you. I swear I'll stop you.
There's only one way you can do that, Jenny. I just told you how. Think it over for a minute, eh?
He walks out of the room for a moment, and you slump back in a chair, sure that he means what he says, that Seattle has caught up with Hillcrest, and there's no way out. Then, only a split second before he comes back, your eye strikes something on the table next to your chair, a long, bright, sharp pair of scissors. You reach out, grab them, hold them under your bag as you rise.
Now let's get down to cases, Jenny. It's not whether you're going to raise the dough anymore, it's how.
Floyd, I want to be very sure about this. You know what you'll be doing to me.
Huh?
You know there's no possible way I could raise that money.
Listen, I just told you.
All right, Floyd. I'm just making sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Well?
Would you pick up my bag, please?
I thought you'd bring it with you. Sure, baby, sure.
All right, Floyd. You decide.
It's only after it's over, when you're back in your car, that you realize you still have a chance. That you were lucky enough to be wearing gloves. That when Floyd Durant is discovered with those scissors in his back, there'll be no way to connect it with wealthy, gracious Gina Crane. There's no sleep for you tonight, of course. And by morning, your mind is dull, your eyes heavy, as you sit across the table from Clinton at breakfast, looking at the back of his paper.
More coffee, dear?
No, thanks. Oh, another murder last night.
What?
Yes, for once, thank heaven, the police are on their toes.
You mean they know who did it?
Yes, a woman.
Could I see it, Clinton?
Here, read it. A store detective from one of the downtown shops was stabbed with a pair of scissors. It was bound to have been a woman.
They haven't decided who it was?
Her name's there. Barbara or something or other. She followed him down from Seattle. There it is. Barbara Arnold.
They Arrested her?
This morning.
Oh.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I just hate to hear about these things, Clinton. So much crime and...
There'll be less of it when I get elected to office. And by the way, I'd better be getting to my office right now. Things are beginning to hum down there with nominations coming up.
Clinton, darling, you know the Parkers are at Yosemite.
Yes?
They want me to join them for a few weeks.
Now, Gina, you know that's out of the question. I'm tied up with a committee right now and...
I mean, couldn't I run up alone?
Would you like to?
Would you mind?
Well, I suppose not. When do you want to go?
Right away, Clinton. Today.
You had to get away, didn't you, Gina? Even if it's only for a few weeks, it gives you time to sit back, collect your thoughts, and then try to forget all about Floyd Durant, Barbara Arnold, and murder. Somehow, by the time you return from Yosemite, you have almost managed to forget. At least your mind is made up that no matter what happens to the girl they've arrested, you're not going to interfere. Most important of all, Clinton must never know.
I'd have appreciated you coming back last Friday, Gina. I wired you to return then.
I'm sorry, darling, but I was meeting so many important people and having such a marvelous time. I didn't think a few days would make any difference.
Fortunately, they haven't. You won't be needed until tomorrow.
Tomorrow? For what?
Jury duty, dear. You've been selected as a prospective juror in the Arnold trial.
What?
I'm sure they'll accept you and...
Clinton?
Yes?
Clinton, I can't serve on that jury.
Can't serve? What are you talking about, Gina? You'll be ideal for them. Why, you've scarcely even read about this trial. No prejudice, an open mind.
I'm sorry, Clinton. I won't serve.
What? See here, Gina. I'm sorry to disagree with you. I've given you your way many times, but this is one thing on which I've made up my mind. I want you to do everything in your power to get on that jury.
But, Clinton, I...
The committee notified me while you were away. I'm going to be nominated for state senator. The campaign won't be easy. We can't have anyone saying that my wife refused a simple obligation of jury duty.
Clinton, you don't understand.
Of course I don't understand. Is there any reason, Gina, any reason in the world why you shouldn't be on that jury?
No, Clinton. There isn't.
That's better. We'll go down together.
Yes, Clinton.
Oh, and by the way, wear something simple. Black and white, perhaps.
Of course, dear. And I'll be ready in the morning.
You never expected anything like this, did you, Gina? All night and the next morning, driving down to the courthouse with Clinton. Your mind is struggling for a way out, but there doesn't seem to be one. All you can do is pray that Barbara Arnold, the girl you ran into outside Floyd's room, will fail to know you. As the attorneys question each candidate for jury duty, you're trembling inside, telling yourself over and over that it was dark in that hall, that Barbara had been crying, that you barely spoke, that she wouldn't know now in this courtroom.
And you're sure, Mrs. Crane, that you can approach this trial with an open mind, that you haven't reached any decision on the basis of what you heard or read in the newspapers?
I'm sure.
And you would have to be convinced, beyond all reasonable doubt, that the defendant, Barbara Arnold, my client, is guilty before you could vote for conviction?
I would.
Thank you, Mrs. Crane. That's all.
Thank you.
Just one moment, Mrs. Crane. Just one more question.
Yes?
Are you certain that you have never met the defendant before?
Yes, positive.
I see. For a moment, Miss Arnold thought that you looked familiar. She must be mistaken.
She is quite mistaken.
All right. The defense accepts the jury, Your Honor.
And the prosecution will prove, beyond reasonable doubt, that this girl sitting here in front of you, we being as her attorney, has carefully instructed her did with malice, forethought, and hatred in her heart, murder Floyd Durant. Be positive, Mr. Jackson, that the defendant is the person you heard threaten Mr. Durant on the evening of June 14th.
Well, I can't be sure of the voice, but I did hear him quarreling, and he called her Barbara.
Oh, he called her Barbara?
Yes, sir. I heard that all right.
And what time was this quarrel?
About 8:30, I guess. My wife and I were going out to the movies, and we heard the girl sobbing and yelling.
And what were the words she used, Mr. Jackson, as dear as you can remember?
She said, "I'm going to get even, Floyd. I don't care what happens."
But I didn't mean I was going to kill him. I didn't mean that.
Order. Order.
Summers Arnold, after your bitter quarrel with the deceased, you turned and ran out of the room?
Yes, sir.
Was that before or after you stabbed him with the scissors?
Oh, objection!
Sustained.
Miss Arnold, how do you explain the presence of your fingerprints on the scissors?
I must have picked them up, touched them while I was in Floyd's room. I was very upset. I wouldn't remember. You have to believe that.
You're asking us to believe a great deal, Miss Arnold. Mysterious woman outside in the hall. Someone you can't identify.
I don't care! I didn't kill Floyd! I didn't kill him! No matter what you say, I didn't kill him!
That is for the jury to decide, Miss Arnold. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the attorney for the defense insists that you must find this girl, this murderess, innocent, as long as you hold any doubts to her guilt. Well, for once, I agree with him. But there is no doubt. She quarreled with Durant. She admits that. She threatened him. She admits that. The only thing she doesn't admit is that she killed him. And she doesn't have to admit that. Her fingerprints are on the weapon. There you are, ladies and gentlemen. Motive, opportunity, and evidence.
Yes, Gina. Motive, opportunity, and evidence. And as the trial moves into its last day, you're feeling more confident than ever. And you're more exhausted than you realize, Gina. You oversleep the next morning, have to dress hurriedly, slip into the black and white crepe outfit, and grab your black and white bag as you run out the door to the waiting taxi. And there's another ironic thing, Gina. 15 minutes after the jury retires, you find yourself elected foreman. Yes, sitting there in the black and white dress, the same outfit right down to the handbag that you wore on the night you killed Floyd Durant. Foreman of the jury that should be trying you.
5, 6, 7, 8. We stand 8 for conviction, 4 for acquittal. We have to talk it out further.
Yes, Gina. You have to talk it out further until the other 11 members of the jury join you in a unanimous vote for guilty.
But Mrs. Crane, I still don't see why, if it was premeditated, that she would use the scissors. I should think...
It's a woman's weapon. I thought of that too, Mrs. Adamson.
You don't believe, then, that there's anything to her claim about a mystery woman?
Not at all. I think that's the weakest argument they presented.
Oh, I agree with Mrs. Crane. That's just a trick.
Right. They're not giving us credit for good sense.
All right, ladies. I agree with you. I'll change my vote.
Very good, Mr. Knowles. Then, we're all agreed?
Yes, here, Mrs. Crane. Write it down. Write down our verdict.
We, the jury, sworn upon our oath, and after careful deliberation, find the defendant, Barbara Arnold, guilty of murder in the first degree.
Well, Gina, you put it over. The incident in Seattle with the late Floyd Durant is closed for good. The letter from the past, the one he wrote to you, is something that you can forget, because Barbara Arnold is about to be condemned for Floyd's murder. Clinton will never know the truth now, will he, Gina? All he'll have is praise for the way you conducted yourself in serving as foreman of the jury. The jury that should have been trying you. As you file back into the courtroom with the other 11 members, you're trembling a little, but not with fear this time, Gina. No, it's because you're thrilled, excited, because everyone in the room is looking at you, waiting for the verdict.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. We find the defendant...
No, Mrs. Crane. As jury foreman, you'll please hand the verdict to the clerk. She will read it.
Oh, yes, of course. I had the envelope right here. I must have dropped it.
You put it in your purse, Mrs. Crane. I watched you.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'm sorry. I don't seem to find it. We women keep so many things in our pocketbooks. Wait, here it is. This must be it.
Very well, Mrs. Crane. Hand the envelope to the clerk.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mrs. Crane.
Well, read the verdict.
But, Your Honor, this...
The clerk will read the verdict.
But...
Will you please read that paper?
Yes, Your Honor. June 14th. My dear Mrs. Crane, apparently you don't remember me, Floyd Durant. But I remember you, Jenny. I remember you very well. I know when you read this, you'll wish I were dead.
No, that's the wrong paper. I have the verdict right here. Oh, no.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whistler series entitled Beyond Reasonable Doubt.
We hope you have enjoyed our version of this classic thriller. Join us again next month for our 8th mystery play, The Strange Sisters. You may listen to our 17 previously recorded radio plays online anytime by visiting huntleyradio.com and selecting Vintage Voices.